and I don't know that, you know, the people are saying, boy, I better go see whatever that's hospital care. I, for one, am on the board at the hospital and have spoken out on this issue, and no one's come to me and said, that's not a good idea. Yeah, that doesn't mean people aren't out there thinking it, okay?
That's where I was when I was getting it, because nobody's expressed that point of view to me. And I mean, not that everybody's expressed that any point of view, but I know people that have said, you know, I would be dead if it wasn't for that hospital. Some lady that I ate with at Christmas time at that senior citizens dinner drove herself to the hospital because her husband was on a vacation and she couldn't get a hold of anybody to take her. And she said, you know, if it wasn't for this hospital, I wouldn't be here today. And, you know, I guess nobody's expressed that point of view to me, and doesn't mean that it's not the...
I'm with Zane because I've had 12 people in the last week alone, and all of them over 40 years old have said they won't go to this hospital. One last night called me up, and this is hilarious. He told me that he already has to go to Fort Madison and get his driver's license and his license plates. He might as well go to the hospital there.
I've heard a lot of that already.
One out of 12 people say they was for it. If it was a one-time deal, I've had 11 people who said absolutely not. And that's just what I've seen. I think we're kind of
taking a shot in the dark anyway out here, but how are we going to know unless we don't try? I mean, if we don't try and everybody loses their job, you know, that's going to be hundreds of people out of jobs. But, you know, if you help them out and it works, and however long they're going to be there, they're going to be there.
But the problem I have with that is if we give them $100,000 today and 3 months from now, it turns out to be for naught. What do we have to show to the citizens for their $100,000 gift?
Well, here's the deal. I've said it before. You got to take a chance sometimes, but here's the deal. You know, you want to spend nothing, and probably if you don't, and they're not going to get the extra funding from other sources, lose the hospital, okay? Or you're going to save 270 jobs. Job retention is more important than getting jobs in here, okay, with our unemployment rate. So this is not an issue of did somebody screw up and let the hospital get into this situation? Are we crying because we don't get reimbursement? If we don't do it, you're not going to have a hospital. That's the answer. It may not be tomorrow. It may be in a year, maybe 2 years, maybe 5 years. I don't know. But, you know, you talk about this since 2010, this position deteriorating. This position has gotten better for the hospital. They were in much worse shape back then. They have cut what they've had to. You talk about large, high-paying jobs not going. Al Zastro is no longer running the hospital. Wally Winkler is both doing the CEO and the CFO. I mean, they've doubled up on jobs. So, you know,
Is Al Zastro still being paid?
Is he getting
health benefits?
Yes.
Yes.
How come they have?
And I have a real... I'll be blunt. I have a real problem because I don't think, Mr. Mayor, that you should have gone onto the board of directors of that hospital. To me, it's a conflict of interest. You knew that they were in trouble. You knew that they had already approached the city for $100,000. And you should have distanced yourself from that and said, as a mayor, I should not be involved with that business. It's a conflict.
Well, I think it's not, because I think, am I going to sit here and say, oh boy, I don't know anything about what's going on? If I don't educate myself, and if I don't go out there and do things, then, you know, you're not paying me for what you should be paying.
Basically, all we've heard from the hospital is from you, because they never show up here to talk to us.
Well, they've been here before, and Wally Winkler, I guarantee, is coming tonight, unless he's...
It's a little late for him to show up and come in at the last minute and say, anybody got any questions?
Well, I take umbrage with the fact that you say I should not be on that hospital board. I'm here to support the community, okay? And that's part of it. Here's Wally right here, so don't stop. Let's stop bad-mouthing him.
Okay.
We're having a little discussion.
That's okay. Go right ahead.
We're having a little discussion right now, and I'm going to open it up to questions to Wally. You've got some, Zane.
I really don't have any questions for him unless he's got some answers for what is the status of Keokuk Area Hospital going to be 3 months from now?
3 months from now? That's pretty easy. I mean, we'll be here 3 months from now, and we're okay for probably the next year. We have been working with federal government and state government on several different programs, and we've had some settlements from past years. Medicare reimbursement is really uncertain for the next several years with reform and several other things that are going on. But for the next year, we're going to be here, as will most other rural hospitals. But we're talking long-term, all rural hospitals are going to struggle with the current Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement.
In the fall, in October of 2010, whoever was head of the board of directors at that time,
that was Jeff.
It was reported in the Hawkeye newspaper, and I believe he actually showed up here a year and a half ago. And he said at that time, he was quoted as saying that the hospital was losing hundreds of thousands of dollars every month. Where are we at right now? Is $100,000 a drop in the bucket? Is
no.
it really going to make that much difference?
Actually, two-part question there. First of all, we lost about $1.6 million last year, fiscal year. It was a very difficult year with changes in both reimbursement and changes in volume at the hospital. And I don't know whether the council, everyone is aware of what's happening with rural health care at all, but inpatient activity is really decreasing very quickly. It's going to outpatient activity, and of course we get paid better for inpatient than outpatient, and so that makes a big difference, and we've had to make some very significant adjustments. Expense-wise, we have foregone any wage increases for 3 years now. This year we suspended our 401k pension plan contributions from the employer to employees, and we have done every conceivable thing we can to conserve cash and reduce expenses. This year, in 6 months, we're about $1.4 million down in expenses from last year. So after the $1.6 million loss of fiscal year 2011, as of 6 months of the new fiscal year, which is hard to believe, 6 months has already passed after the last fiscal year, we actually have $124,000 surplus for the current year. Now, the question comes up then, what's the problem? You're now operating at a little better than break even. Well, the problem is that we've used cash reserves, our accounts payable, we've used to really finance operations and so on and so forth, so accounts payable are higher than they really need to be, and we need to kind of pick up and pay some of that off, and so on and so forth. So we have made huge inroads into doing what's necessary. At some point, just like the city, just like every other employer in Keokuk, we're going to need to give our employees a wage increase. After 3 years, it's probably due at some point in time. We're going to have to reinstate the 401k pension contributions at some point, or you won't be able to attract and retain quality employees at the hospital. So the hospital is doing what we need to do. The board is making very difficult decisions about replacing staff, reducing staff. We've reduced over 70 full-time equivalent jobs over the last year and a half. So employment is down at the hospital. Some of that will need to come back at some point in time in order to really do what's necessary at the hospital. So we're doing our part. The big issue that we're fighting is inequitable reimbursement from both Medicare and Medicaid. Most rural hospitals in Iowa are critical access hospitals, and they receive 101% of their cost of care. We receive about 75%, 74 or 75% of our cost. So imagine any of your businesses, you folks who are business people, with 75% of your customers paying you 74 or 75% of your cost. How are you going to make that? And the issue becomes, for us in the healthcare industry, the traditional way to do that is to pass that along to commercial insurance. When you're in a economically depressed area, as Keokuk is, and I think most of you know the demographics of Keokuk, it's very difficult to, we only have about 25% commercial insurance. And most tweeners, we're a tweener hospital, we're not the small, very small critical access hospital, and we're not the large teaching institution, both of which receive 100 percent of their cost from Medicare and Medicaid, being that tweener, we need about 40% commercial insurance to help us overcome the government shortfalls. Now, last year was very difficult. Roquette, for instance, still had part of the lockout, and many of those employees did not have insurance. Well, in fact, most of them did not have. We still took care of them. They didn't pay us, and there was no payment for many of them. And so you're shooting at a moving target here. Some things are getting better. Some things are not getting better. What we're trying to do is work with our federal government, our state government, our local municipalities to come up with kind of a cooperative effort. Senators Harkin and Grassley and Representative Loebsack have been very helpful in getting Kathleen Sebelius, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, to expedite some of the old Medicare payments that were due the hospital this year, and we've received those, so that's helped on a cash basis. They also are trying to expedite a two-year-old settlement worth about $900,000 to the hospital, and I received a letter in the mail just this past week where Marilyn Tavener, who works for Kathleen Sebelius, has given instructions to WPS, our Medicare intermediary, to expedite that that settlement. So there's a whole lot of different pieces to this puzzle that are going on. The city's participation in this is that whatever you produce will generate some federal matching dollars, and whatever you give us, you divide that by 0.39, and that's what we will actually receive. So if you gave us $100,000 and the county gave us $100,000, that will generate about $512,000 of actual payment to Keokuk Area Hospital. Is a half a million important to the hospital? Absolutely. A half a million dollars is absolutely nothing to sneeze at. Now, will we survive in the next 10 years? What's going to happen at the Supreme Court with reform efforts? What's going to happen with Medicare over the next 10 years? What's going to happen with Medicaid over the next 10 years? What's going to happen in Keokuk with our business growth and different activities? If any of you have the answers to that, I'd be happy to know those, and it'll help me doing our budget process at the hospital tremendously. But it's very difficult to project those types of things. What we need is some short-term help in order to get to that next level where we're working with the federal government and state government and so on and so forth, and doing our own internal cost reduction, cost containment, and other activities in order to continue down that road and provide quality health care to the citizens of Keokuk. And that's what we're after, and that's what we're asking for this evening, is one part of a huge, complicated health care financing plan. Kind of long-winded. I'm sorry for that. Healthcare, I'm telling you, healthcare finance especially, is a very messed up situation. As an MBA student from years ago, with a lot of our emphasis was always on business 101. If you produce a service or a good and it costs you a dollar, you need to receive a dollar back in terms of revenue in order to make a go of it. In the healthcare industry, it doesn't work that way. The federal government thinks that they can pay some rural hospitals less than the actual cost, and that can be made up from commercial insurance and other sources of revenue. And in a lot of cases where you have a higher percentage of commercial insurance or other resources like endowments or investment income, so on and so forth, those hospitals are able to do that. Keokuk has no endowment funds. We do not and have never received any tax revenues to date. So we don't have other sources of revenue. And because Medicare and Medicaid pay us less than the cost, we have to figure out some way to overcome those hurdles. Sure.
First of all, I know I worked for a company at the time that had Blue Cross of Iowa. And when the hospital chose for 1 year not to have that service, that we dropped, it actually ended up increasing the cost of the insurance for the employees because they had been grandfathered into an old clause they had lot of them went to other hospitals that still carried the Blue Cross. That was a start in my understanding of what was going on. We also have people that can barely struggle to make insurance payments now, if at all, and now we're asking them to take their tax dollars, help the hospital out some more, and then there's no guarantee. The things that I'm hearing from the public are in the psychiatric ward, Medicare and Medicaid, and then 70 jobs that have been cut. Was that the problem for the last 10 years? Is that why the hospital is where it's at now? And also, why are we waiting until we're almost dead before we struggle? Why hasn't there been more hospital administrators in here at the city council for the last 2 or 3 years keeping the council updated and keeping the city updated as to what's going on?
I wish I had brought a pen and paper. There's probably about 8 questions in there, and I'll try to address most of them. The Blue Cross issue, first of all, at the time that, and that's been 10 years ago or more,
right,
probably, and it's not been an issue since. But at the time, Blue Cross was paying Keokuk Area Hospital less than every other hospital in the state. For whatever reasons, I can't tell you, we kind of griped about it, and we said, gee whiz, we'd like to get the same payment that, everybody else gets. And so we did drop out for a year or two. The board decided that they would reinstitute that, and since then, Blue Cross has made the decision that they don't want to be an insurance company that makes up for government cost shortfalls. So Blue Cross actually is our worst commercial insurance payer. They pay less than United, less than Humana, less than any other commercial insurance company, and that's because they've, and you can't really argue with Blue Cross's logic. They're basically saying the government really should be paying you the cost of the care that they're asking you to provide to Medicare and Medicaid patients. And so we wouldn't really have to pay you 150% of cost. We could just pay you cost plus 5% or something else, and the world would be a good place if government paid you your cost and we could pay you a little more than your cost. Everybody could conceivably get along fine. That's not the case in rural America. Medicare reimbursement is very inequitable. That's why the issue before us on the table tonight is even here. Medicare has said it is inequitable for Keokuk Area Hospital not to be paid more. So because you take care of more elderly, disabled, indigent, and low-income patients, we'll create a disproportionate share hospital program. And under the disproportionate share hospital program, if your state we'll provide some dollars, we'll match that, and then we'll put that in a pot, and we'll share that with the disproportionate share of hospitals. In Iowa, unfortunately, the Iowa legislature has decided to share 90-some percent of the disproportionate share monies with the University of Iowa and Broadlands, and very little with the other 8 disproportionate share hospitals in Iowa. So we don't get much of that money. And so what we've asked the government, the state, to do, and what they've done is they said, okay, in addition to state appropriations, we will allow local municipalities to get in on the act, and if they give a dollar, we can use that as part of the federal matching funds, and you'll get more back. So that's kind of the Blue Cross disproportionate share Medicare equity issue that we're talking about. In terms of your employees who might feel that they've been shunned, I would just answer this. Is Keokuk Area Hospital takes care of every single patient, regardless of if they have insurance, don't have insurance, don't have anything, can't pay anything, and that is part of our issue. We have more of those people than most hospitals. And so we have not, we have tried to be, and one of our goals and objectives at the board has been not to be a burden on the county or the city. That's why you haven't seen people here asking for money. We hope that we could actually live with the reimbursement we got from Medicare and Medicaid and so on and so forth and not have to be asking for any of those funds. 64 to 70 communities in Iowa have already asked their counties or cities for money because of the same issues. They couldn't make it without it. Henry County Hospital, and Representative Heaton and I have had several heated conversations about he thinks we should just convert to a city hospital or a county hospital, and you should just fund the government deficits. What he doesn't quite understand is that Henry County is a critical access hospital. They receive 101% of cost-based reimbursement from both Medicare and Medicaid, so they have no government shortfalls. And so the county can give them $600,000 or $700,000 a year, which they do, and help Henry County Hospital survive. Can the city of Keokuk or Lee County provide $4.5 million of Medicare and Medicaid cost shortfalls? I don't think so. I think that's a different situation. And we what we have asked is, and what hopefully is going to happen if the city and the county provide at least some funding, we hope that the state will also provide some funding, just as they do for the University of Iowa and Broadlawns, so that we will actually get some additional funding next year as well. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, and I don't know if I missed one of your questions, but if I did, please let me know.
My memory's so short, I probably forgot it already. The Keokuk Hospital pays property taxes?
We're a really unique entity. We are a 501c3 tax-exempt, charitable, nonprofit organization. And as such, for most cases, the hospital property itself, for instance, we do not pay taxes. Now, we also operate CAMI, a durable medical goods equipment company. We do pay taxes on that property. We have a couple medical offices that we pay taxes on. Some we do, some we don't. And then we also get into the retail tax and that sort of thing. And this, I have to have my controller go every year to an actual seminar on what gets taxed and what doesn't. We have to go down our supply cost, and if you have a supply that comes home with you, such as a prosthesis, if we put in a knee or a hip or something else, we get taxed on that. If we just use a supply in the provision of your health, we don't get taxed on that. So we go down our list every day. The controller has to do this and say, okay, that's taxable, that's not taxable, this is, that isn't, and it gets to be very difficult to decide. In terms of the tax-exempt issue, Senator Grassley has been very, very interested in tax-exempt nonprofit hospital exemptions and tax-free deals. And so he has implemented several things. We provide on our nonprofit tax return, which is $990, and if any of you want to look, you can go to www.guidestar.com. And you can look up any 990 for any nonprofit in the United States, including Keokuk Area Hospital. And you will see on there the level of charity care or uncompensated care that each institution actually provides. Last year, we had a total of about $6.8 million of uncompensated care provided by Keokuk Area Hospital, far and away above almost all Iowa hospitals. And that's because, as you know, our community is suffering. We have a lot of people who can't pay their own way. We have a lot of elderly, a lot of disabled, a lot of indigent, and a lot of low-income people. So.
The $1.6 million that you was shortfall last year, then you compensated that out of reserve?
Several actual ways. One is, as I mentioned, cost shifting to Blue Cross, United Healthcare, and the other commercial insurance companies. They pay a premium, as do all of you, for your insurance. If you pay a premium for your insurance plan, you're paying more than you need to for your own care, because I don't care which hospital you're at, you're paying a portion of that to care for the government shortfalls and the indigent healthcare. So that's a part of that. And then on a cash basis, we have used our reserves. We have used appreciation funding, which normally would go towards buying equipment and facilities and so on and so forth, to pay for operational issues and debt and so on and so forth. So there's a variety of ways we've we've been able to survive and make up for that. Well, can you do that forever?
Yeah, we know a little bit about that. Here as well.
1 year from now, if you're to come back, mm-hmm. and we have the trust in you that the hospital is righting the ship, and you come back in 1 year from now, like you say, there's a lot of unknowns, and the worst part, they don't know if the sun's going to come up tomorrow yet. Are you confident that your ship is going to be better off 1 year from today than what it is today?
I'm going to have to use Webster's there and look up confident and see what, you know, how truthful I can be about that. I'm worried about the long-term future. I think if there's any hospital that can overcome the issues, it will be our hospital. I'm very proud of what our hospital has been able to do with what we've had. You know, I've been in the business about 35 years, and I've seen Medicare and Medicaid programs come and go. And usually what happens with those federal and state programs is they allow institutions to get almost to the brink of disaster, and critical access hospital legislation is a very good example of this. Without critical access hospital legislation, there would have been probably close to 2,000 rural hospitals closed today. And yet they decided to go ahead and implement that several years ago, and that saved those hospitals. Now, will they do the same for tweener hospitals? I think when you tweener hospitals are just about uniformly like us. They're in population cities and towns of 10, 12, 15,000 people, and they don't get the better reimbursement. So I cannot believe that the federal government is really going to let, there's about probably 300 or 400 of us left nationwide that are tweeners, and I just can't believe that something's going to happen and the Medicare program is going to come up with some new program.
I can't believe, you know, under the worst scenario, that our hospital just has to shut the door. I don't want to see this hospital go down. I believe maybe the thing down in the community is, do we just cut our losses now, keep our $100,000, or do we give $100,000 and help. I don't want to say prolong the agony, but to help. Will we come out of it? That's the only thing I think the people of Keokuk are going to know. Sure. Is there a light at the end of the tunnel?
Sure. I personally believe there is. That and the dime will probably get you that cup of coffee we talked about earlier. But, you know, yes, the $100,000 really is $500,000, if you think of it that way. And will that, I mean, that for us, $500,000 is a lot of money. We can stretch out $500,000 a long, long way. And so, long term, yes, I think we're going to be, and we've talked about this, we actually have affiliation meetings going on with Blessing Hospital in Quincy, Great River Medical Center in Burlington, and Fort Madison. We are all kind of in the same boat at a different level. The government is looking at what's called accountable care organizations now. Blessing is afraid that they're going to have to be a part of that and that they're going to have some problems. Fort Madison is only a heartbeat away from being just like us because they're seeing, I mean, they're getting kind of the same reimbursement and their commercial insurance base is dwindling. Newton is another tweener hospital, and when Maytag left there, they've begun to see, I mean, they're having losses. And they don't really know what they're going to do eventually. So, you know, there's a national and statewide issue here for those tweener hospitals. Will we be able to survive is a very good question. My board asks that every single month, and we try to project out as far as we can. My answer is yes, if we can have some city-county support, if the people of this town want the hospital to be around, it'll be around. You know, if you decide that, you know, it is hopeless and we're going to abandon the place, you know, there's not a whole lot that the hospital or anybody else can do at that point. So It is a very difficult question. We have been wrestling with it for a while. We have made tremendous progress, as you can see, from a $1.6 million loss last year to at least $125,000 surplus so far this year. We're getting to where we need to be. Eventually, we need to give our employees a wage increase. Eventually, we need to do some other things. We can't do that if we're gone. So we have to start somewhere, and I think this is a really good start if the city can help us along with the county.
Wally, what's payroll a month, roughly?
A month? Well, it's about $13 million a year, so okay. It's a little over $1 million a month.
Okay. So, I mean, we all know it's a major employer.
Oh, absolutely.
Community, but, you know,
probably the second largest employer, maybe, or third.
$13 million payroll a year.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if we don't contribute these monies to the hospital, you're saying you probably stay afloat for about a year?
I don't want to say that exactly. All I can say is that your contribution will be of huge help for the coming time period, whether it's a year, year and a half, 2 years. We will do everything. Even if you don't give us anything, we're going to try to survive. But your contribution will help us do that to a very large extent. $500,000 is $500,000.
Sure.
What is it that requires you to treat everyone that walks in the door?
That's basically, you know, my board has actually asked that question, and they said, well, why don't we just quit taking care of, one option. We try to look at every single option, and not that anybody wants to do it, but they said, what if we just quit taking care of the indigent? Don't take care of them anymore. Problem with that is we have an emergency room. When you show up in the emergency room, we can't even ask you if you can pay for your care. There's a government regulation called EMTALA, the Emergency Medical Act, something or other, EMTALA, which requires us to assess you, find out what's wrong with you, treat you, and then try to find out whether you can pay or not. So for an elective procedure, we can decide not to do that. And basically, indigent patients don't get elective procedures. You know, we're not doing plastic surgery on indigent patients or doing things that aren't necessary. But usually what happens is that indigent patient shows up in the emergency room, and it's a life-threatening or at least thought to be a life-threatening situation. We have to take care of that patient. We can't turn that patient away and say, go away. We don't want to see you.
First question shouldn't be, who's your insurance company?
That's right.
But I appreciate your new tactics. I recently took my 25-year-old daughter, who's married with a child, in there because she fell down some stairs at 11 o'clock at night. And while she's waiting there in pain to see the doctor, they're asking me what my age is, what my birth date is. And I'm like, I'm her father. I brought her in. That has no bearing on it. Guess who got a bill in the mail? Me. So... I mean, I guess you got to try different ways to get the money in there. But.
Well, we do have to find out the information related to the patient and their guarantor eventually, sure.
Anybody else have questions at all?
How many staff members do you have at the hospital right now that have salaries over six figures?
Over six figures. We have two pharmacists and probably three to four. Now, I'm going to exclude physicians. We do employ some physicians, and all the physicians would be over six figures. But normal staff, no.
I'm just curious. You said you...
We use the Iowa Hospital Association wage survey every year to look at salaries, and I can tell you our wages are probably at about the 65th percentile, especially for management, compared to management at other hospitals statewide. So we're pretty frugal, and that's a worrisome thing for us, because you try to find your next experienced manager, and we have tremendous, tremendous, tremendous longevity in our management staff at Keokuk Area Hospital. We have lab manager with 24, 25 years. We have radiology manager with 26, 27 years. We have our purchasing agent with 40 years. We have people who have been there and know what they're doing for a long, long time. And when they leave, that next guy is probably not going to settle for the 65th percentile of payment to get the experience. So that's probably a long-term issue that that we'll have to deal with.
We also had ER doctors that had to get the book out and read the procedure to stop a nosebleed. I was standing there. It's been quite a few years ago. That doctor's gone. That's not an ER doctor.
Well, I would agree. I mean, if you had that experience.
That's probably why he's gone. But bad taste in the mouth lasts long.
We can relate, and I just passed along, actually, our latest patient satisfaction surveys to our staff today. Medicare, Joint Commission, are actually, you can go to hospitalcompare.com, and you can find out whether people think our nurses are answering the call lights quickly enough, whether it's too loud in the hospital, but all those types of things. And our patient satisfaction this past month in every single category exceeded the national average. So I'm here to tell you I'm proud of our hospital. We do not take second fiddle to anyone in terms of either patient satisfaction or quality. Do we ever have patient complaints and problems that we need to resolve and get better? Absolutely. And as I tell our managers, we don't want three administrative people sitting upstairs trying to think of new, better ways to do things. We want 300 people coming in here every day, and we want you to be competent at your job, and we want you to look for some new little better way to do things every time you come in the door every day. And by doing that, we will be the best primary care hospital we can be. We're not going to be Mayo's. We're not going to do open heart surgery. So if anybody thinks that's what Keokuk Area Hospital ought to do, we're never going to do that. But we can take care of pneumonia, congestive heart failure, appendicitis, cholecystectomies, and on, and we can do that very, very well. And we do that very, very well. Our infection rate is second to none. We just don't have quality issues at Keokuk Area Hospital.
Do you ever do any analysis on where the patients come from, how many are coming from Missouri versus Illinois versus Iowa?
Just every month. And we do about 18% from Illinois, about 16% from Missouri, and the rest from Iowa. The vast, and I can tell you, the board has always looked at that. I think years ago we always felt that, doggone it, the Illinois people and the Missouri people are all the public aid and the indigent people coming to use our facilities. Not true. Keokuk, far and away, has the highest level of indigent and Medicaid patients. And our commercial insurance base is really Illinois and Missouri better than Iowa.
One more real quick one. You say we're a two-year hospital. How far in between are we as far as how far above the critical or how far below the highest one? What
real,
would it take to get down maybe to where we can get 100%?
Real good question.
Cut, so.
Complicated question, but real good question. We actually meet all the criteria to be a critical access hospital right now. We actually have 49 licensed beds, so we could take care of 49 patients if we wanted to. To be critical access, you have to be 25 beds. Our average census for this past year is 17. So we could live with 25 beds. We could give those up. The federal government has a hard, fast rule that you have to be more than 25 miles or 35 miles from another like hospital in order to be critical access. So that's the criteria. That now, that being said, and I'll tell you this, and it's been the most frustrating thing in the world, we could have actually had a waiver in 2005 to be critical access. At that time, our average census was 28, and we had peak seasons of 48 to 50 to 52 patients. So the board medical staff did not think we could live with 25 beds. Times have changed since 2005, very, very significantly in Keokuk. And so now we're at the point where critical access application is actually closed. We do have, and I don't know whether it's 10% chance, 8%, 5%. We have a little window open thanks to Representative Lobsack, Senator Harkin, Senator Grassley, and I have framed in my office a thing on letterhead with all three of their signatures on the same letterhead, which you're not going to see that very often, writing a letter to Kathleen Sebelius, Secretary of Health and Human Services, saying, think about giving these guys the opportunity to be critical access. Now, that has beget the regional office of CMS, Medicare, to say, write us a request and make your best argument about why you should be critical access. And we've got lots of people in Missouri, for instance, who would have to travel more than 15 miles by secondary road, which is another criteria. So we made the argument. Now, I got a phone call this past week that says, we're going to deny that request, but you should go ahead and apply with your Medicare enrollment to change in status from acute to critical access. You will get a denial for that, and then it'll come back to CMS, and we will actually review and appeal. So the door is a little bit open, and perhaps we can get that, but it's we can't plan on that.
But Wally, don't we have plenty of days where we exceed that critical census?
4 days in the last year.
4 days in the last year, and is that because we've transferred people to other hospitals?
No, not really.
So
no, it's just a couple busy times we've
had.
No,
I mean, is the reason that it's only four
because
we've made decisions to move patients to other hospitals rather than admit them to our own?
I would say not. Most of the time we refer a patient, it's because it's for a service that we don't have. Or, our orthopedic surgeon, who we have one of, isn't available 24/7, so they have to go somewhere else. So, no, I don't think that's really an issue at all.
All right, thanks, Wally, very much.